Accession number 27083, Reel 40.
I'm sorry, Sam, you were describing the interesting accommodation that Mussolini had built for
you. It was very good indeed, very lush. And that was fine. And so I slept ashore. I effectively had to eat on board because, as the flag captain, I had to support the CNC for his various lunches and dinner parties and so forth. And I usually went on board for breakfast to be sure that I was ready for the start of that day. And we had I forget if it was 4 or 5 days, that sort of time visit, and it was really all go, except for the final day, and we'd really run out of puff by then. We'd done all the things that needed to be done, and so on. And I had taken up the ship's Dicer from Malta, the little local craft for flying passengers from cruise ships and other, including HM ships. And still, it was a hangover from the big fleet days. Each ship had its own Dicer in Malta, and hence its own Dicer man, who was entitled to pick over the gash and get a little bit of perks. And you thrust a pot of paint into his hands, and he would smarten up the boot topping along the side and that sort of thing. And we had taken our Dicer up, which was not then done. It used to have been done, but it had fallen out of fashion. And the Dicerman was very chuffed at this. And we flew the White Ensign, and we went round the canals, and the elders of Venice leant over the bridges, over the canal, and I'm glad to say stopped just short of spitting in our faces as we went underneath them, and so forth. And it was great fun. Every morning so far during our visit, we'd woken up to thick fog, really thick fog. And the day before we were due to sail, I summoned my very good squadron navigator called Derek Wallace, and discussed with him the practicality, and whether it was seamanlike or not, to leave harbour in thick fog there. And the passage meant that we left our moorings and we went for about half a mile, and then we had a right angle turn, and thereafter an absolutely straight passage down the, I forget what it was called, but the main approach to Venice. Furthermore, outgoing traffic had right of way. But we were also aware of the fact that the squadron previously had gone to Venice and had run into fog on departure. And one ship, and I knew the captain quite well. He was another gunner officer, and he was a friend. And he'd said, this is enough, and he'd anchored in the fairway. And something had promptly run into him. Anyway, we concluded that it was all right and perfectly seamanlike, although the risk factor was obviously increased, to leave, even if it was foggy. And on the morning of our departure, we woke, and it was brilliant sunshine, clear as a bell. We unmoored, and in formation, we started to leave harbour. And we turned the right-angle corner at the end and made down the main straight, which was about 3 miles long. And within a matter of minutes, ran into a wall of fog. So I immediately told the other ships to act independently and generally follow my movements as a signal for that. And we were then busy in avoiding...
Which they can do on radar.
What, to follow my movements? Yes. And we were navigating by radar, of course. And we quickly became aware of the fact that the rule of the road, whereby outgoing ships had right of way, was a complete myth.
Fallen into disuse, had it?
Hmm?
Fallen into disuse.
Well, I don't know, but anyway, it wasn't being complied with. And that was all that mattered, because it meant that we had to do something to avoid those that were coming up. And there was quite a strong stream against us. And by this time, I'd reduced speed, and in those ships, there are three orders for steaming ahead in any ship, really. Just to sort of go, creep speed is slow, and then the normal for ordinary operations and manoeuvring is half, and you can vary the revolutions to adjust your speed, and in an emergency you can order full. And the meaning of full is that you are down below in the machinery spaces, you are to open it up and risk damage to machinery, but give it all you've got, because it's an emergency. And in the Leanders, the revs for slow, this sounds rather a contradiction, but for technical reasons I won't bother you with, the number of revolutions for slow was set at a fixed level. And if you wanted to go slower than slow, your only way of doing it was to order half, having previously ordered slower revolutions than the standard revolutions for slow. Do you follow?
Yes.
And this we did, and we had revolutions for a speed which would just have given us a sort of half knot advantage over the upcoming, the ahead stream, and so on. Well, the first bit of opposition was a sort of coastal trawler or some such. And that came quite close, but it slid past. I may say the Commander-in-Chief was down in my cabin scratching his bread-and-butter letters or whatever during this. And we were aware that the next thing, which appeared to be a rather larger echo, was coming on and coming on. And I had, to play it safe with this coaster, I'd ordered full momentarily. First time I'd ordered it in my life. And we got past, and that was all right. The second one was obviously bigger. More or less at the last minute, it came in sight, and it was obviously going to hit us. And I put the wheel over, but I couldn't put it over too far, otherwise I swung my stern into its oncoming path. And I ordered full, and I didn't quite miss. And the accommodation ladder aft, which had been triced up but not swung in, that just caught the ship, and the platform was buckled, and we clipped off a UHF yardarm aerial, and this lumbering great thing lumbered past, and you felt the ship give a slight twitch, and of course the Commander-in-Chief had felt this, and up he came just in time, as I was shaping up for the third contact coming up. And just in time for me to hear me order full for the third time in 5 minutes. And he muttered, oh, very unpleasant, very unpleasant, and scuttled off down below again. And that was that. Well, then we got out in the clear, and the others got away all right, and back we went to Malta. And in due course, in Malta, the CNC convened a board of inquiry, which is a perfectly normal thing to do if you have had a collision. And it was chaired by the Chief of Staff, Commodore, called David Medis, who had himself got into trouble when he was working up a frigate as a captain, I did, in Portland, in the workup area. And they'd scrubbed him a bit, I think. I don't know the circumstances of that. But he was obviously out for blood, and he had a very curious team on his board of inquiry. And he tried very hard indeed to make me say that I had very little experience of ship handling in fog. And I refuted this and said that on the contrary, I thought I had a good deal more than the average captain experience. And I cited various cases in Portland where it was quite often foggy and so forth. And he went on, and so did I, and I wouldn't give a bloody inch on this, and so on. Anyway, that whole frolic came to a close, and I thought the incident was past, and that was that. And the time came for me to take the commander-in-chief to, I forget where it was, but some other place, probably Greece, I think. Yes, it was Greece. We were going up to Athens. That was it. And the usual routine, I joined him for supper in the evening. We were on our own again, no ships of the squadron with us at all. We'd had supper, we'd had a perfectly civilized conversation and so forth. And it was about 9:30 when my supply officer, who acted under these conditions as sort of acting secretaries of the commander-in-chief to give him some typing effort and so forth, came to the navigator's cabin where I was sleeping to say that the commander-in-chief would like to see me. So I went down to what was normally my cabin to be told by the commander-in-chief that he had decided to court-martial me. I said, why? Which is quite a good question. And this flummoxed him. And he hemmed and hawed and said, well, you know, it's over this this collision. I was shocked. I was surprised. And I was pretty irritated. And I said, sir, I'm indeed very surprised. I have to say that had I been in your position at the time, first, I would have been on the bridge anyway, which he had not been. And second, when it was all over, I would have summoned my flag captain, thanked him for doing what he had done, and given him a very stiff glass of brandy. And that was right at the end of the conversation, and my commander-in-chief didn't know what to do. But he made his decision. So that was that. Well, in due course we returned to Malta. I won't go on about our visit to Athens, which was curious. He transferred to the submarine depot ship, the Forth, when we got there. He transferred his flag, and it fell to me to receive King Constantine, as he then was, with his charming wife and his sister-in-law, a very happy, immensely good-looking trio. And I showed them round the upper deck of Galatea, and all this was, I suppose, in the middle of the forenoon. And then they were going to repair on board Forth, the submarine depot ship, as was I, for the commander-in-chief's formal lunch. And after we'd finished a round of the upper deck, and we weren't going to go below, I took them into my cabin, and by arrangement I had a couple of other officers there, I think. And I had a rather wet Maltese stirred. And I asked the king what he would like to drink, and they all said, they all settled for sherry, and that was that. And of course, being the host, I was the last to receive my glass of sherry, And I took one sip, and I realized that it was not sherry, but it was brandy. And furthermore, it was horse's neck brandy. It wasn't even good brandy. And I thought, well, come on, the king is no fool. And of course, he spoke fluent English. And was a very nice man. And I thought I'd better come clean. And I went straight up to him and said, sir, I'm deeply sorry, but the drink I've been given, and I asked for sherry, in fact, is horse's neck brandy. It's not even good brandy. What is yours? And he said, well, mine is brandy too, as a matter of fact, Captain, but I'm enjoying it. And I forget what the girls did, but anyway, that was that. And across we went. They went on ahead. And in due course, I went on board Forth. And John Hamilton, who knew about the King's visit, of course, to Galatea, and there were various others present, including our naval attaché, who'd been one of my fellow CEOs when I'd been driving Dunkirk. Very nice man. Not the bombast, another one that I hadn't previously mentioned. He'd had some job in Greece prior to this, and he'd gone back to it as naval attaché, for which he was well suited, and he knew the drill, and he spoke a bit of the language. And the commander-in-chief the previous night had summoned a meeting as to what the program was going to be while we were in Athens for both the Forth and Galatea. And the naval attaché, our naval attaché, was invited to attend this. And he'd been round chatting up his chums. And although it was not very late in the evening, 5 o'clock or so, he hadn't really recovered from the lunchtime session. And their chap that he was capable of knocking it back a bit on occasion. And he'd really been taken to town, I think, by his Greek friends, who held him in very high regard. And he was, shall I say, vociferous at the meeting. And every time the commander-in-chief made a suggestion, but he made it in a fairly mandatory fashion. And this time he said, well, I don't really know about that, sir, but I think perhaps, you know, after all. And finally, it was more or less to shut up. Well, anyway, we come back to the lunch party. And I was presented to the king. John Hamilton was saying, sir, I don't think you've met Captain Leach, who commands the Galatea. The unfortunate king, having just left the Galatea to come to lunch. So that was pretty simple. Whereupon the king said, oh yes, I know Captain Leach well. He serves a very good glass of sherry. And he really entered into the spirit of it. Well then, the time came for the court-martial. And a chap in my term, who was a great friend actually, he flew out as prosecutor. He was my seniority captain. And another chap, who was again my seniority captain, and who had defended the captain of Ark Royal when he had grounded entering Plymouth in the Hermes. And on that occasion, there was some upstart prosecutor, this is the Ark Royal court-martial, and the captain at the time, the name escapes me, Gibson, Donald Gibson. An aviator, very nice man. He'd been in my staff course, at my naval staff course. They had just touched a rock going up the Hermes, and he was court-martialed. And the prosecutor was some upstart of a pusser who didn't really know anything about anything. In examination, said, Captain Gibson, you had come up the Hermes in what can only be described as marginal weather conditions, which he had, because the idea of keeping a ship's company of 2,500 waiting for the long weekend leave, stuck down in, you know, off the Hoe, and able to get ashore only by tugs, such as there were, going right up and so forth, wasn't on. And I would have done exactly the same if I'd been in his position. Did it not occur to you, Captain Gibson, that to experience any degree of alarm at bringing a ship the size of Ark Royal up the Hermes under those conditions? And Donald Gibson, who had a rather sort of glowering visage, leant forward and said, rather like I quoted earlier with Carew Hunt in Malta, and said, "I had fucking kittens every time I went up, whatever the weather was." And that was that. But he got reprimanded and so on, but he still went on to be a vice admiral. Well, his prisoner's friend came out as my prisoner's friend, a chap called Ronnie Forrest, very nice man. And the prosecutor, at one point, there were two courts martial, one of me, the captain, and the other of my navigating officer, Derek Wallace, who was a very good one, and who had done very well at the time. And the prosecutor, at one point, said, "I would refer the court to the footnote to page something or other of the navigation manual, Vol. 3. And he was asked to read it out to the court. And this said, words to the effect that there may be occasions when it is better to risk a grounding in order to avoid a collision. End of note. Was I aware of this? But of course I wasn't aware of this. It was years since I'd read the navigation manual, Vol. 3. And I said, "Sir," I said, "no, I was not aware of this." And certainly the last time I had read, without saying when that was, the navigation manual, Vol. 3, it contained no such note. But had I been aware of that note, my first action would have been to have written to the captain of the navigation school at HMS Dryad and pointed out the supreme folly of this advice. And the court giggled. But there it was. And I was convicted for going, whatever, half a knot beyond the minimum speed necessary to for safety, as if I'd been going fast. And I was going, whatever it was, at 4-5 knots against the stream so far. And my navigating officer, squadron navigating officer, he was also convicted, and we were both reprimanded. And we went back on board together, and I got out of the boat first. And when I crossed the gangway, I turned, waited for my navigating officer to cross the gangway, and in a very slightly raised and very clear voice in front of the gangway staff and the officer there, all concerned, I turned to my squadron navigator and said, "Well, there we are. That's that. And that's past. And I want you to know that I admire what you did at the time, and I continue to have every confidence in your extremely good capabilities as a squadron navigating officer." And I turned away. And I reckon the buzz would get round the ship. Well, that was it. Then,
may I just ask this question, which we might, if we may, conclude, as we're nearly at the end of the tape, if we may. You still had to have these cordial relations with your CNC who brought the court-martial.
Yes.
How did they go?
Well, I must confess, my personal opinion of the CNC had not been enhanced.
No.
But we remained superficially all right. There was nothing I could do about it. You know, there was no point in kicking against the official pricks. There's a happy ending to this issue, which we shan't reach tonight. But there it was. How much more have we got?
We just have a couple of minutes on this side.
Well, at about that time, Mary was taken ill, very ill. and had to be whisked off to Hasler, to Bigi. And it was a childbirth problem. And she was operated on by a brilliant naval surgeon who really saved her life. And I was distraught. And by then we had two girls, and they were both with me. And I had things to do, and indeed I had to go to sea from time to time and so forth. But it fortunately, the only fortunate bit about it was that I was in harbour for a period then. And all sorts of friends helped to, including my own officers, some of whom had their wives out there, to look after the young and so forth. And as quickly as I reasonably could, I got the girls back to England by in charge of some friendly person who was going back and was prepared to take them under his wing, or their wing. So that relieved me of the girls, but not of Mary. And she was very ill. She very nearly died. And I was extremely upset. And so when the opportunity offered, I took her away, and we went up to Comino, a little island north of Malta, for whatever it was, a week or 10 days of station leave for her to rest and recuperate and so forth. And I could do with a bit of that myself, and so forth. And then we came back, and that really was pretty well the end of my time out in the Mediterranean. And Mary was packed off home. Meantime, I'd got her sister to look after the girls and put them into their local school and that sort of thing. The squadron came back in dribs and drabs. Mary, by this time, had completely recovered. And I brought the ship back, and I brought her into Portsmouth. I had rather a tricky berthing between other ships, very close together. But that was all right. We got in, and there was it. And there, waiting on the jetty, was a friend who was a Commodore First Class. He was Chief of Staff to the then CNC Portsmouth, who had been on the Officer Structure Survey Committee that I'd referred to earlier, which is where I really got to know him. And he came on board with two long blue envelopes, one addressed to me and one to my squadron navigating officer. And I took him down to my cabin, sent for Derek Wallace, and we opened these things. And they came from the Admiralty, Minister of Defence as it then was, from naval law. And they took 2.5 foolscap pages to say, on the one hand this, on the other hand that. But the meat of the thing was that the convictions had been quashed in both cases. And we looked at each other, and we just tore these letters in two. And that was the great mistake of my life. And what we should have done was to hang them in the gents for posterity.
Yes.
But that was that. It's a good moment to stop.
It might be a good moment to stop, yes. Henry, yes. Well, thank you very much. We'll continue on Friday.
Yes, fine. Now,